Still, though, looks like it's going to be cloudy and wintry and cold in the northern half of Scotland. Could be some significant snow in Caithness and Highlands. So winter returns here. Elsewhere, it feels a bit more like spring. The breeze will be picking up, though, in the southwest and Northern Ireland. Thickening clouds, spots of rain later. The best of the hazy sunshine will be further east. And again, temperatures of 10 or 11 degrees. Doesn't get any better than that, Mairead.
When less cold is all we've got to look forward to. We live in perpetual hope. Thanks, Darren. Good night.
Good night.
Now, our book of the week, The Love and Wars of Lina Prokofiev by Simon Morrison, tells the extraordinary story of the wife of the famous Russian composer Sergei Prokofiev. Devastated by Sergei's affair and the end of her marriage, Lina has been desperately trying to escape the Soviet Union. In her efforts to secure an exit permit, she's been fraternizing with staff at foreign embassies, bringing herself to the attention of the regime. Events are about to take a dark turn. The reader is Sean Thomas.
On the evening of the 20th of February, 1948, Lena received an unexpected telephone call. Could she collect a parcel outside? She hesitated, feeling tired and unwell, but the unknown caller insisted. After dressing hurriedly, she neatened her chestnut hair and swiped on some lipstick. Gathering her coat and keys, she took the elevator to the first floor and walked through the empty inner courtyard to the front of the building, where she expected to find a uniformed courier. The man who met Lena was not in uniform, nor was he alone. As Lena was thrust into a car, she realised that the worst had come to pass. Her name had appeared on a detention list, and her arrest ordered. Fear stopped her from screaming, but she gained enough bearing to challenge her abductors. "Why am I in this car? Let me go. Let me tell my children. I can't just go with you like this." Neighbours who witnessed Lena's arrest would later recount the details to Sviatoslav, then 23, and her younger son, Oleg, 19, who had returned home to watch helplessly as the family apartment was plundered. A photograph survives of the entrance after the search. Papers litter the floor. Oleg sits on a kitchen stool, staring blankly at the list of items removed. Police seized paintings, jewellery and photographs, along with other mementos and treasured possessions, including Sergei's coveted Förster grand piano. Sviatoslav and Oleg trudged through the snow to Prokofiev's dacha, outside Moscow, with the grim news. They had not seen their father for months. He listened in silence before stammering, "What have I done?" First at Lubyanka, then at Lefortovo prison in southeast Moscow, Lena suffered 9 months of sustained interrogation. Investigators spat on her, kicked her, and threatened her children. Needles were stuck into her arms and legs. In the deep winter cold, she was made to walk outside without a coat to face another round of questioning, as the screams of other inmates echoed in the central square. On the 1st of November, 1948, Lena was court-martialed and sentenced to 2 decades of hard labour in the desolate northern reaches of Russia. 6 years later, from the labour camp where she was living, Lena submitted one of her numerous, pointless petitions to the Prosecutor General. She first listed the charges against her, and then tried, in confusing fashion, to demonstrate that they were baseless. "The evidence was distorted to the point of non-recognition. They said to me, 'Don't be foolish, sign the confession. We know you're not a spy, but it has to be this way.' They intimidated me by saying that the lives of my children would be destroyed. I wasn't permitted to sleep. I was driven to the point of madness." Little remains of the camps where Lena fought for 8 years to survive, or of the entire Gulag system. Gulag is an acronym which translates as the cumbersome Main Administration of the Correctional Labour Camps and Colonies. Prison camps spread across the Soviet Union to form what Solzhenitsyn famously called the Gulag Archipelago. They were an integral part of Stalin's five-year plans for industrial expansion, because they provided slave labour in places where no one could be enticed to go. Following sentencing in late 1948, Lena made the hideous six-week trip north to the Arctic Circle and the Gulag. Before moving into the barracks, Lena was forced to strip naked, examined, and sent to the bathhouse for disinfecting. She received a standard camp uniform, felt boots and galoshes that were too big for her, a well-worn outer coat of pleated wool, and a head covering. A number on the back of her clothes identified her, and she took her place in a building with other women serving 20-year sentences for treason. On the 19th of December, 1948, Lena wrote a cramped 4-page letter to Sviatoslav and Oleg, the first of the two she was allowed to send each month. She claimed to be feeling a little better. It was frigid outside, she acknowledged, minus 47 degrees Celsius. The brilliance of the sun appearing over the desolate sub-Arctic horizon brought to mind the sunrise music in Sergei's Scythian Suite. The air was very good, but blinding, howling blizzards were frequent. Because of her age, Lena had a lighter workload than other women, but still it was grueling, cleaning the bedbug and lice-infested barracks when their residents were working. Lena ached to the core. Soon her back would begin to hunch and her stride would shorten. Yet, even while cleaning latrines, Lena sought to preserve her dignity. Pulling buckets of human waste through the snow and ice, she struck up intellectual conversations with others in her brigade. One of the women knew the constellations and would point out stars and planets. Another had studied Tolstoy. Lena, of course, shared her knowledge of music. Surprisingly enough, she actually pursued musical activities in the Gulag. Imprisoned actors, singers, and dancers could obtain at least partial exemption from hard labour by organising agitprop shows for the guards and prisoners. Such activities were perceived by the authorities as a spur to produce more during the workday, so as to enjoy the cultural activities at night. Lena petitioned to join a makeshift orchestra. There's a chorus, violins, flutes, accordions, squeeze boxes, a guitar, a very good conductor who's a serious musician, and a male chorus. She wanted her sons to send vocal music for her to perform, including arias from Soviet operettas and a lament composed by Sergei, "I Shall Go Out Across the Snow-Covered Field," from Alexander Nevsky. Other items that Lena asked to have sent to her were more practical. Food was the most pressing concern, then clothing. Over time, Lena was allowed to communicate more often with her sons. She did not write to Sergei, and he did not write to her, though he sent money to her through Sviatoslav and Oleg. Lena heard the news of his death in 1953 from one of the prisoners who had been listening to the radio. She hung her head and walked away, tears flowing down her face. The details came from Sviatoslav in a letter. "On 5th of March, Papa was cheerful and felt well. He was working on the final corrections to the Stone Flower, a ballet score. But in the evening he came down with a terrible headache and suffered a brain hemorrhage. He wasn't in pain for a long time. It was over in an hour." The next line in the letter cannot be read. It was thickly crossed out by the censor. Fortunately, Sviatoslav kept the rough draft, allowing the missing words to be reproduced. "And what a cruel, tragic coincidence. Papa died at the very same time as Stalin, on the 5th of March at 9 p.m. The censor left only the word tragic visible. Stalin's death occasioned a first reckoning with his crimes by the new Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev. On the 5th of January 1956, Lena sent a telegram to her sons with word that she anticipated being transferred to the Russian Republic of Mordovia. The harsh labor camps where she was imprisoned had been liquidated. Both of Lena's sons went to see her the following month. They arrived late in the evening and spent the night in an annex, sleeping on tables. In the morning, for the first time in 8 years, Sviatoslav saw his mother. The visit was unsupervised and lasted 4 or 5 days. Sviatoslav, then 32, recounted. After the noisy, stuffy barracks, the narrow and uncomfortable plank beds, to have a separate room, to sleep in a real bed, to have endless conversations with us on the most sensitive of subjects, freedom in the past, freedom in the future, was for poor Mama a true celebration. Sviatoslav left on the 4th of March. He said goodbye to his mother outside in the snow, at the third post on the open road from the camp to the railway. Lena was not allowed to venture past that post. They kissed and hugged each other. Sviatoslav walked through the field that led to the train, looking back at his mother as she receded from view. She lingered, waving goodbye with both hands. On the 13th of June, 1956, Lena was granted release from the gulag. For the rest of her life, Lena feared being picked up on the street, flinched whenever a car passed close to her, and relived the interrogations in her sleep. From July 1956 to 1959, she lived in one of the two rooms in an overcrowded apartment, with Sviatoslav, his wife, and son Sergei in the other. Soon, Lena began receiving invitations to Prokofiev performances and festivals. In 1966, she travelled to Bulgaria. In 1968, to Prague. But she was repeatedly denied the opportunity to venture beyond the Iron Curtain. Though Lena's children and grandchildren were brought up in the Soviet Union, eventually all made it to the West. Oleg was the first to leave, and in August 1974, Lena requested permission to visit him and her 4-year-old granddaughter. She was shocked to receive an external passport with a 3-month visa to England. Lena flew to London with 20 rubles in her purse. She was not a defector. In fact, she took care to extend her visa through the appropriate consular channels. But she never intended to return. Lena lived her remaining years in London and in Paris and spent extensive periods in the United States and Germany, serving as a cultural representative for the Prokofiev Estate and Foundation, the latter established on her initiative. She died in January 1989, aged 91. 5 years before her death, she narrated Peter and the Wolf at Alice Tully Hall in New York. Lena read with élan and dry amusement, according to one reviewer, and delighted the audience.
I am going to tell you a story about Peter and the Wolf. How Peter and his animal friends, the bird, the duck, and the cat, caught the wicked wolf.
Sean Thomas was reading the final episode of The Love and Wars of Lena Prokofiev by Simon Morrison. Richard Hamilton was the abridger and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Saturday, the 6th of April. There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy and Seoul. The general synopsis at 1800. Low Norwegian Basin, 1009. Expected southern Norway, 1008 by 1800 Saturday. Atlantic low moving steadily northeast, expected 90 miles west of North Fitzroy, 1004 by same time. High Shannon, 1025, expected Portland, 1026 by that time. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sira, northwesterly 5 to 7, snow showers, good, occasionally poor. South at Sira, northwesterly 4, increasing 5 or 6, wintry showers, good.